Welcome to another episode of the Following Films Podcast. I'm Chris Maynard, your host. Today we're joined by Sunrise director Andrew Baird. In the film, Fallon, a former police officer, returns to the site of a terrible crime. And the people of a rural town soon discover that this mysterious visitor is actually a vampire who feeds on blood and fear. After befriending a kind immigrant family, the instinctive killer is faced with the choice between seeking revenge and seeking redemption. Guy Pearce and Alex Pettifer star in this thrilling tale written by Academy Award-nominated screenwriter Ronan Blaney. But before my conversation with Andrew, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Bookmans. They're an independent bookstore that believes in the magic of storytelling and the cinematic arts. If you're looking to expand your collection of films, music, or books, be sure to visit your nearest Bookmans and discover something truly wonderful. If you haven't already, please follow the Following Films podcast on Spotify to show your support. This will help us to continue to bring you in-depth conversations with the talented individuals who shape the world of cinema. Sunrise is currently in theaters and available on demand. I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks. Awesome. Hey, Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time to do this today, man. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure. Whatever I can do to promote the movie, that's the name of the game.
Well, it's a hell of a film you've made here. I enjoyed this quite a bit. In fact, we were supposed to chat about this last week, but I had some personal stuff come up that made it so I wasn't able to do it. And I'm actually really glad that we were able to reschedule because it gave me a chance to revisit the film and watch it again. And this is a really, for a genre film or for any film, this is a densely layered movie where there's a lot going on here and it definitely warrants a revisit. So I definitely not only recommend people watch this film, but go back and see it a second time because you're going to see a lot here and pick up on a lot of things that were being laid out right from the beginning that you may have missed the first go around.
That's great, man. That's that's cool. Yeah, there was a lot of narrative threads and layers and tonal elements in the movie, in the script to begin with. So the biggest challenge for me was to kind of unify it all into one tonal piece that had a, yeah. So, but it, I was just on another interview and I lost the point, but the point was, it was difficult, but the result was, I think, something more original, you know, because I had no real interest or respect whatsoever for vampire lore or tropes whatsoever. I just saw Fallon as an addict, somebody who was just fell into this black hole after tremendous tragedy and had to go through a kind of process of healing, you know.
Well,
acceptance.
I think that's why the film worked for me so much because I'm somebody who just doesn't care about vampires for the most part. There's a couple stories here and there that I enjoy, but as far as monster movies go, they're the ones that probably scare me the least. And I think you took a really original approach where, I mean, clearly the monsters, the things that are really scary here are the humans. They're the ones that are the, you know, the sort of the racism in the film, the jingoism in this movie. That's the real threat here. That's the real thing that is, to me, the real concern. And this is an incredibly timely film, especially when you hear certain comments about blood purity. And then you look at the opening monologue by Guy Pearce in this film, and it's like this film was written last week, which obviously isn't possible, but it feels so incredibly timely right now.
Mm. That's good. I mean, it was written 18 years ago. Yeah. So,
God.
And I think it came off the back of the ceasefire in Northern Ireland. And I don't know. I mean, that's the writer who's very dark, you know, but like, as I said, you get confused, what do you say in which interview, but it's like, there were so many very, very powerful pieces in the script But then I felt when I read it that other stuff was jammed in there, probably outside notes from other filmmakers that were involved or whatever, executives, nonsense, you know, which affects. So that had to be removed. But there was, yeah, I mean, as you said, that opening monologue gets you right in. Initially, the movie had had this kind of other piece tagged on to the beginning of it, a very kind of Trainspotting-esque sort of opening where Fallon ends up feeding on this couple and their kid. And this kind of junk, you know, that was attached to the script, which had to just get rid of it, you know. It just was one of those things. I think the original material from Ronan was really premium and came from a very truthful and dark place of growing up in an environment like that. And then it started to get messed up with all this sort of vampire lore and all this nonsense, you know? You just had to find your own authentic way into it and the journey. This guy's like, to me, I always saw it more of like a Western, and The Man with No Name, but this man with no name is like a junkie, you know, and he's just a broken man who has to like heal and accept the tragedy that has befallen him and heal. And you heal through love, not through hate, you know, and that's what he gets from the family, you know, from the family that took over his home. And in an earlier version of the script, Fallon's wife was pregnant. And we toyed with what we're going to keep her pregnant or not. And then we thought it might be a little bit too much. You know, I don't know, maybe we should have. It was just like when she was murdered and hung up to the tree. Maybe it's a bit too much. So it's pretty, I remember shooting that moment, you know, isn't it in the trailer? So I think people have already seen it, but his wife like kind of essentially crucified on the tree. It's pretty powerful. I just said like this is an anti-religious movie. It's a very spiritual film and it's very anti-religious. Now, would Ronan the writer say that? Probably not. I don't know. Northern Ireland is a highly religious place. I went against that because that, and I found a kind of much more spiritual, like, approach to this piece, which I think is what there was. I think Northern Ireland very much features in the movie. It's very much a Northern Irish movie made 95% by people from the region. It just was transposed into an Americanized genre, you know, world, you know, but this could happen anywhere. We were very close to reverting back and putting it in Northern Ireland, but I just thought it would be too niche. I wanted it to be more universal and yet keep that DNA from the region, which I think it has. And that was interesting to me because I grew up watching American movies and TV shows. I've formed quite an appreciation for European and foreign films, or whatever. But I've ended up making these American movies that have had a lot of, at the moment, DNA from primarily Ireland and also the UK, which is what I'm made up of. So it's interesting that I'm moving out of that now. And, the next movie I'm doing is in South Africa and it's now been set there. And, but again, I found a personal way into the piece. And as you said, It's a thriller, you know, it's a survival movie. And it's, again, the monsters lie within the humans, not, you know, elsewhere. That's where the real threat is lies within a cell, within us, you know. So and we're all capable. Fallon is just as capable of the atrocities carried out by the Reynolds family if put in the right circumstance, you know. And you know, we're human beings, so it's interesting you say that. It's so timely or whatever. Yeah, it wasn't easy to kind of find this, you know. It was a constant process of shaping and working. We spent 5 months editing this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an incredible amount of time to be given. That's a gift to get that much time to edit a film.
Yeah. Well, that's down to like my first partner in the feature films was Martin Brennan and from Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Well, we've done them all together. And then my manager, Jib, and then I have another guy, Nathan Klinger, who's a young whiz, who I'm doing my next movie with. I've just had like a lot of, you know, the budgets have been tight, the schedules have been very tight, but I'm extremely efficient. But because of that, and because of the talent I'm able to get, the cast, you know, the actors, I'm pretty much given total creative freedom. So that's been a gift, you know. And the thing is, it's like it costs an inordinate amount of money to shoot and it costs very little money to edit. So it makes no sense to me why you don't spend more time on editorial and stepping away, breathing, coming back. It's writing. It's like,
yeah,
it's like saying to a writer, oh, here's the idea. We need the finished script in 10 weeks. What? You know, so it's like writing is cheap, you know, like it doesn't, it's kept for the writer themselves. It doesn't cost anything. And editorial is an editor, an assistant, whatever, a machine. And I'm going to edit the next movie with my niece, who's my age, but her dad, my half brother, is a very famous Hollywood film editor, brilliant editor. And that's going to be exciting. We worked together before on a music video 10 years ago. And the editorial is a huge, it's actually, I think it's probably my favorite part now, because it's where the movie truly is made. No question. Because if you mess it up, you can take the best material in every possible way. And if you do not put it together at a premium, like if you really don't nail that material in its assembly, you can totally destroy the film.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, to me, the most difficult part of that making any film is the edit. It's the, for me personally, the divorcing myself from what I know about a story and to somebody who's never seen it before, and to go in at each cut and see how juxtaposing these two scenes and these two moments, these two beats next to each other, completely can change the way that a scene feels in the whole film in a lot, in really profound ways. And so it's hard for me to get out of my own way. It's something I always, hats off to people that have that ability.
The thing is, the red coat was barely in the originals, in the initial script. It wasn't properly established. It was throwaway. It was like, what's this about? What's the significance? It just was like, it was never developed properly. So I had allotted an extra day to shoot red coat stuff after we assembled the thing. And then as we got into it more and more, because it really was like, there's two editors on this, and Helen, the first editor who edited most of the movie, had an enormously difficult task, because there was a lot of stuff that had to be resolved narratively in the edit. But it wasn't like I was going into this blind, like I was winging it. I wasn't winging it. I knew that I would resolve it, because I could. I knew that I was shooting what I needed. And then with Alex, particularly with Alex, also with some of the other actors, but particularly Alex and myself, we just...
Today's episode of the Following Films podcast is brought to you by Bookmans. So the last time I went into Bookman's, I went straight over to the movie section, as I often do. And I was so excited because one of my favorite things that happens when I go in there, I'm looking for a movie and I don't know exactly what I want to see, something I've been meaning to see, and there's a blind spot. And when I saw East of Eden, I was super excited because it's a movie I've been wanting to see for years, but for whatever reason, I've just never gotten around to it. So the film adaptation of John Steinbeck's East of Eden, it's a powerful cinematic achievement. I know I'm not the first person to say this, but it absolutely does justice to the novel's what can only be described as profound themes and the complex characters. It's directed by Kazan and features outstanding performances from the whole cast, but mainly here by James Dean as Cal Trask. The film captures the essence of the book while adding its own visual and emotional dimension. The cinematography, which looks absolutely incredible in 4K, captures the rugged beauty of the California landscape. So it sets the stage for this intense family drama that unfolds throughout the film. And the screenplay manages to condense this complex novel that is East of Eden without feeling truncated. It makes this really intricate plot, takes that and then just condenses it down and really only gets the essential elements of it. And all the themes are still intact with love, jealousy, and the struggle between good and evil. That's all there. And it doesn't feel like a lesser than. It feels like a complement to. If you've read East of Eden and haven't seen the film, definitely catch up on it. Highly recommend it. If you've only seen the film and haven't read the book, definitely check out the book as well. It's worth your time. But in the movie, James Dean's portrayal of the troubled Cal, it's nothing short of iconic. It showcases his raw talent and charisma. The supporting cast is also incredible, especially Julie Harris, I think, does an equally compelling job here with just an outstanding performance. And there's a depth and authenticity to these characters that wasn't very common for this time. So it's something pretty remarkable here. East of Eden, it's absolutely a classic that continues to resonate to this day, still holds up. I think that's mainly because of its exploration of human nature and the complexity of family dynamics. It's a timeless masterpiece that deserves a place in the annals of cinematic history. I think it's there. It just took me a long time to catch up with it. This is a must-watch for anyone who appreciates powerful storytelling and exceptional performances. So remember, next time you go to Bookman's, they have your cool covered. Hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
We just experimented like with the material on the day and throwed stuff out and changed things and made it work. And it was, I love working like, I think I'm quite a lot of preparation. And then I like to be quite experimental, you know,
prepared to be loose in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you're the closer you get to the shooting these fabricated realities, then the more real they become, and the more real they become in the moment, the more opportunities present themselves, because this cinematic world becomes more and more real. And as you're in it, there's opportunities. So don't ignore them, you know, but again, you just have to have a support mechanism that allows you to do that. And I have had that. You know, and the funny thing is, because these are independent movies and the parameters financially have always been precarious and tight, it's like I've just been left alone, you know, to just do my, but I'm to do my thing, you know. And so to kind of show up with like 10 times the budget, but like have everything monitored and everything, and oh, you know, that, you know, we need that scene shot the way it was written. That's like a commercial director.
Right.
And that's not what I do. It's not what I do. It's not what I want to do. And there's no way I can make a movie and say it's a film by me. And again, I felt that's a bit pretentious, but it's like there's so many behind me. But it's a movie, and the director is the author of a movie.
Yeah, your name goes.
Unless it's you know, I don't know. I mean, look, if you're doing like Iron Man 6, you know, I mean, you're the director, but still a movie, if it doesn't do well, it's your fault. You know, if you do season 4, episode 9 of Homeland or something, and it that doesn't do well, you get away with it because it's the showrunners, the writers, you know. So it's tricky, you know. But with an independent movie like Sunrise, it rises and falls on me. I can't blame the writer or the actors or, oh, we didn't have enough time or money. You know, it's like, so it's up to me to really author it and say, this is my DNA. You know, this is what I believe in. This is the last guys that were I was talking to on the previous interview was like, do you put your own personal experience into it? It's like, I mean, that's all it is. It's like everything about it is my own personal experience. You have to, otherwise it doesn't have any dimension to it. It doesn't have any personality. The character's vacant.
That's when cynicism creeps in to me, where it feels you can have a cynical movie in nature. The message can be cynical, but if it's made with cynicism, then I think it can reek of that. And I think that's what that is when you don't have that authorship, when you don't have that, that it's not a reflection of yourself or something that you, even if it's not a one-to-one, you have to have some connection to the material, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I got a lot of criticism on Zone for its similarities to Blade Runner. Look, you know, the script obviously had similar elements, the visuals, you know, it's hard. But then once it just went, and I think it was unfairly, you know, criticized to the level it was, because I think it's a pretty solid piece of work for your first movie. I don't know. It's, but with this, it's hard. This one was a nightmare to kind of untangle in the edit. You know, it really was. And because of that, I think we came up with something that's quite original, you know? So, but who knows, you know? Who knows what the critics say? And at this stage, you know, I was really nervous. I was really hurt the first time. I was really nervous the second time. And this time, I don't give a fuck because I know that I've made a good movie. I'm about to start my next movie. And, I'm enough movies in to show to know that you're a pretty solid filmmaker and you're getting better all the time. And you know, this next movie I'm doing is like it's bigger and it's more expansive, much more commercial. But it still needs to have that authentic DNA.
Sure.
So yeah, so that's it. And of course, you know, look, it's a very, I have to say to anyone who's interested in making movies or whatever, a huge part of it is surviving the criticism, you know, and carrying on because it's inevitable. But it's the same with anyone who makes a piece of work and puts it out there. You know, you just got to have that inner confidence that you delivered and, then all the people who financed it on Zone, the first movie I did, and Guy and all the actors loved it. Guy was thrilled with it. Netflix bought it and was top 10 for several weeks in the US. It's a big deal, you know? I mean, so, but again, I saw what I learned was the public and the critics don't like repetition. They like originality. They don't want to be, they want something different, you know, but then.
Sometimes they do. And then other times they want the same shit over and over again.
But then you're trying to cast, you know, we're trying to cast a vampire movie. It's not an easy thing because a lot of actors don't want to do it. They all think you're going to be running around in capes and fangs and it's nonsense. And I get it. So actors can be very sensitive creatures and it's like, you know, they don't want to do monster movies. They don't want to do green screen movies, you know, unless, you know, it's tricky. I didn't realize going into it, but a lot of actors are like, I'm not doing a vampire movie. It's got a really bad reputation, you know? So.
Well, there's some incredible ones out there. You have to look around, you know, if you for your film, if you look at like Abel Ferrara's The Addiction or something like that.
I love Abel Ferrara. He's a film. He is the most influential filmmaker on me since I came to the US in 2006.
Have you seen his newest one, by the way, just out of side, Padre Pio?
Oh, it's Shia. No, I have not seen that, but I'll check it out.
He's still doing incredible stuff. So
yeah, well, you know, it's extraordinary he's still alive because he was out of his mind. Yeah, and sure. I remember I worked with Drea De Matteo on One Way, and mm-hmm. I love Drea. And she told me that she was doing, I think she was doing Go-Go Tales. And she showed up on the set to shoot Go-Go Tales. So, we're not doing Go-Go Tales. We're doing this other movie called Our Xmas. So she literally ended up doing a whole other movie. And that's the kind of the way Abel was going. I mean, I don't know. And I saw Go-Go Tales and the documentary did on the Italian San Gennaro in Little Italy. And it was in, I can't remember, the theater in the East Village back in 2010. And he was there. He's just a profound effect on me. Like the work he's done, the way he's kept making films, the way he survived, and like now he's really healthy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, he's had that collaboration with Willem Dafoe and now with Shia and now whatever. I think Nick Cage was going to do Siberia. I don't know what happened there with Willem Dafoe. But anyway, but he's amazing, you know, like he is like, and because his work is so grungy and dark and uncensored and art, but now he's much more like he's really, well, I mean, even with Mary, I'm dying to see this documentary on the making of Mary, the Juliette Binoche movie. Mm. It's Italian guy made it. There's a trailer online. I can't find it. It's just to show a filmmaker go to those lengths to tell a story. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's why I mean, like, being this, what I'm doing isn't directing. This is not direct. Directing is like doing TV episodes and doing like commercials. And don't get me wrong, I'm available to direct. But making these movies is like you're putting your heart and soul into them, often for buttons. And it's like, but that's what you do. You know, you're trying to show what you're made of, you know, as an artist, you know, but for better or for worse, you know.
There's nothing guaranteed that you'll get another at bat when you're making films. And so it feels like you made this film as if you might not ever get a chance to make another one. And I think that's how every film should be made. And that's, I really love this. And I know we're running short on time and I literally have like note card upon note card of question, barely even scratched the surface of what I wanted to get to. But like, this is just an incredible film from every level, performance, costume design, the sound mix on this thing is remarkable. It's just a top to bottom great film and something I definitely recommend people check out.
I really appreciate that a lot. And it says as well, because this next one is quite in the elements, you know, it's out mm-hmm. there in the elements, it's outside of Cape Town. But these, you know, when you tend to have, when the set was so fabulous and everyone's having a wonderful time and you tend to end up making a piece of shit, you know, because it's like, you know, if you go to the gym and you're by the water cooler and you're wearing the right gear and you're saying the right stuff, but you aren't lifting the weights and you're not feeling the pain, well, then you're not getting any, it's a lot of hard work to imbue. I mean, okay, maybe if you're making some romantic comedy in Vienna or Venice, okay, you know, that's part of the DNA of the movie. But with these kind of movies that I'm making, like they're intense and they take a lot of work and they take a lot of figuring out. And again, as I said, this really is a demonstration of Northern Irish people originating, financing, and making because all the post was done at Yellow Moon in Belfast, or most of it. A movie that's for the, you know, an American style movie that's for a global audience. So more, you know, that's fair play to them. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they were willing to make a genre film for adults that has by far more on its mind than, you know, handsome vampires biting one another. So it's a hell of a film. And I would put this on my tripod of Guy Pearce films, probably with Ravenous and Results, as far as the, is there anything this guy can't do? So yeah. Just great performance here all around, really? Though, but loved it, man. So congratulations. And
thank you, mate.
This one. Looking forward to the next one, man.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good. Awesome. Hopefully.
I have faith, man. And by the way, comparisons to Blade Runner, there's a lot worse things you can be compared to. It's what you do after that. And I think you did a lot with that. So
thank you.
Critics don't know everything. So
thanks so much, Christopher.
Take care, man. Have a good one.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Annie.
Time enough to figure you out. Time enough to write this down. Wish me luck, give me hope.